Blog Talk Radio.
How's everybody doing out there tonight? This is Movie Geeks United. We're very excited to bring you the show tonight. As always, my name is Jamie, and I'm a co-host for you tonight. And Jerry and Chris are here with us too. Guys, how you guys doing?
Good. Greetings.
Greetings, human people of Earth.
There you go,
nerd.
Got a good show for you tonight. We're expecting any minute. We're expecting a call from director Chris Severtson and actor Mark Center. Their new film, The Lost. It's a pretty unrelenting new horror film. It comes out on DVD shelves this Tuesday, and we're going to welcome them on the show. You can always log on to our chat room, and you will be greeted by Jerry. Jerry is working.
Yeah, I'm in there right now. So welcome everyone.
Yes. So as soon as you log on to the show and you hear the audio, connect to our chat room. It's a lot of fun. You get to converse with Jerry, gives him an excuse not to pay attention to the show, and it's real good all over the place.
There you go. I never thought you'd actually say that, but
yeah, it gives him a good excuse to drown me out, which I know is, you know. Anyway, Chris, how are you doing?
I'm drowning you out. I'm sorry. I'm not available. Doing
Jerry,
very well. How about you?
I'm good, man. I'm good, buddy. Jerry, I know that you've seen, while we're waiting for these callers to call in, first of all, let me announce a little bit later on the show, I'll be playing a very special outtake clip from my recent interview with Jeff Goldblum. And this interview airs live on the 26th. For the Paul Schrader tribute, but there's a few minutes of worth of pre-conversation that I thought might interest our listeners out there.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear that.
Yeah, it's going to be good stuff. But you've actually, you know, movie fanatic that you are, you've been to the theater
this
weekend.
All right, let's just, you know, you're talking, you said unrelenting about our guest film tonight, right? You used the word unrelenting. Let me tell you something. It's not anywhere near as unrelenting as Michael Haneke's remake of his own Funny Games,
right?
Which I've decided that I know a couple months ago Aaron thought Cachet was overrated and was not his best film, but I will go on the record to say Cachet is his best film and that both versions of Funny Games are nothing more than torture porn disguised as art house films. And that's all I can really say, Jamie. It's been a long time since I've been to a film where people have walked out.
It's really interesting, man. This is an interesting conundrum. How do you make a statement on torture porn without making torture porn yourself?
And he's done it.
No, I'm sure that that's his argument, that he's making a movie that makes a statement about that mentality of why we desire it. But there's a thin line. How do you stop from producing that same product that you're criticizing?
Yeah, and he just comes across as a hypocrite.
Yeah.
The film reeks of hypocrisy. I think the original one, looking back on it, I've seen the same film twice in the last 3 weeks, with just some American actors thrown in yesterday, but it is essentially the exact same film.
Right.
And I don't. It's a pointless exercise. And I really don't. That's all I can really say about it. I don't really have much more to say.
Performance-wise, I mean, it's got to be pretty strong. You've got some great actors there.
Well, let's put it like this. It's like watching it's not like watching a David Mamet play with different actors. You know, it's not like that at all. It's the film suffers its biggest problem because he likes to have one of the characters break the fourth wall and talk to the audience, and it harms the film immensely. It hurts the film. It really actually, I would say, destroys the film. You're more aware of it in the remake than in the original. But it worked for Bruce Willis in Moonlighting. It worked very well for them when they broke the fourth wall.
You just made a Moonlighting reference in the middle of a Funny Games examination.
Well, you know, I thought Moonlighting was one of the best examples of that, kind of self-reflective breaking the fourth wall thing. It just doesn't work here. And what I also noticed in this one is I think Mr. Haneke identifies with the captors in this film.
Yeah.
I think he emphasizes with them, which I find very disturbing.
Mm.
But that's just my take on it. I noticed a lot of the critics actually, in some of them who even praised the original film, just wrote this off completely. And whatever value I thought the original one had, I thought he really tarnished or eroded with this one.
Chris, have you seen the original?
I've not seen the original, and the more I hear from everyone, it sounds like I might not be catching the remake, because Richard Roper gave it a similarly scathing review this morning, just detested it, said it was the worst movie of the year, and that sounds like that's pretty much what Jerry's saying, too.
Yeah, Roger Ebert gave it a pretty bad, I think he only gave it, a star or half a star?
Yeah.
Well, I knew that would definitely be considered one of those challenging movies. And.
But I will say this, though. You remember when Natural Born Killers came out, and
right.
A lot of people said it was one of those films that should never have been made. And these same critics probably praise this film. I think Oliver Stone, and to a lesser extent in Tarantino's script, they captured very well what Haneke's trying to do in these films. I think Stone did it much better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I really do.
I think American Psycho captures it really well,
yeah.
too.
I think those films do it much better than this. I think this
And in a very unique way, since American Psycho plays off as you know, one of the most unexpected of comedies, you know.
Yeah, true.
But it's really about our... would you say it's about our thirst for violence in Americans' Americans' kind of romanticized or view of violence?
I see that. I see it's like his thing of saying, well, this is what real violence... You know, this is how the aftermath, this is what it's really like. It's not... And I understand that. I understand the point, if that's one of the points he's trying to make, but it just doesn't work. Because, like you said, how do you make this kind of film without resorting to those kind of theatrics, those kind of
right,
devices?
Right.
And he falls into it. But you have to, I guess you really just have to watch it at some point. But I will say this, it's the first time I've been to a movie where a lot of people just walked out.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
It got too much to bear for them.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Did you see anything else this weekend?
I saw Doomsday.
Oh, the new Neil Marshall film, yes.
Yeah, I liked it. I mean, I will say this, though. I don't think there's an original scene in the film. It's the most derivative film I've ever seen.
Huh.
I mean, there are, like, just there's a visual quote in every single scene in the film. Whether it's from Escape from New York or The Road Warrior or any... I mean, he really loved these films, and it shows, but I'm not sure there's anything beyond that, but it's a lot of fun.
Right. I thought The Descent was the last great horror film of that kind. Incredibly effective. And now, you know, he's mounting a sequel to it now, so...
What would be the sequel? Oh, God, what would you do...
I don't know.
Oh, you know, they'll get the team of Marines to go down there, and you know that's what the worst sequels, other than you know the first one, obviously that did that, Aliens. The worst sequels are always like that. They take it over the top. That's what
right.
I promise you.
Yeah, yeah. What are the rare sequels that work? I mean, you mentioned one, Aliens.
The Road Warrior.
But Aliens really took it in a different direction, didn't it? I mean, because Alien, if you look at it, that's hardcore sci-fi horror right there.
Mm-hmm.
Aliens is like an adrenalized, pumped up action film.
Yeah,
more than anything,
it's like Back to Bataan.
Yeah,
It's like one of those, like a World War II movie almost.
Yeah, I agree with Jerry. I think the best example, even better example than
Godfather 2, maybe.
Wow, Godfather 2, that's a great example.
Empire Strikes
Back. Another one that's a little bit better, but Road Warrior actually is one that is infinitely superior to Mad Max.
Yeah, and not that Mad Max is a bad film. It's just amazing that what he does with it. And
yeah, I mean, it's the just like Alien and Aliens, Mad Max is really more of a drama, an independent film. There's not a lot of action in it. It's pretty slow.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Road Warrior, you know,
is nonstop.
Badass action movie from the word go, yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And it kind of revels in being like a outsider movie, you know, I'm not quite a B movie because it's an A grade entertainment, but I mean, almost like that. I mean, like a disreputable kind of badass film. And they're all structured the same. I mean, is Mad Max structured the same as the last two?
No. Mad Max,
Still has his family for a lot, though, with Mad Max, you know. I mean, that's
and there's still civilization.
Thunderdome essentially has the same structure as Road Warrior.
Thunderdome, not really. Thunderdome is actually, Jamie, it's really interesting you bring that up, because there are two directors on that. And it's actually, I've always thought, it's really two movies in one. You really, the first half is like, the first half you could say is almost like a Road Warrior movie. And then the second half with the children is totally different. They're like two different stories going on, and sometimes it is they're not always they don't always gel together.
No,
it's like
they
had, and I like the third one, but there are two movies there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think in that he roams around, he gets captured, he's incarcerated, and he escapes, and then he comes back. And usually in the guise of a big road chase.
Right, and he does that, and that's what's really interesting.
Yeah, that's the structure I'm talking about.
Okay, yeah, it's the one thing.
Like a Bond movie essentially has the same structure kind of thing.
Yeah,
it does.
It's hard. I can't think of a sequel other than Godfather 2 that really completely changes the structure like you're talking about. I mean, essentially it's going to be the same structure, isn't it?
Well, and the whole reason to make sequels for studios is to give you more of the same.
Uh-huh.
You know,
talking about did so much more.
Yeah, the artistry of Coppola, I mean, that's Godfather 2, to take those themes from the first one and just enhance them, you know, just blow them out to almost Shakespearean places. You know, where you really, and the most haunting moments in those are the fade outs, and they're so well chosen. The fade outs between the young Vito and the current Michael, you know, or vice versa. Those are really haunting because you really get a sense of those parallels. It's epic. It's epic. And I don't think a better movie's been made about family. I mean, I'm sure it's about mafioso.
It is the ultimate.
Yeah.
It is the ultimate movie on family.
But at the same time, I think the first one could be the ultimate movie on family. I think the second one enhances that. It still maintains that, but it really tells you a big statement about the corruption of America.
Mm-hmm.
And through that microcosm of the corruption of that family.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Jamie. That's the perfect way to describe the second one. And you just watch that, and you watch the transformation of Connie through that one.
Yeah,
I mean, she goes from like floozy to by the end of that, she's just loyal to Michael. And in the third
there is Lady Macbeth. Absolutely, and there is not a more perfectly cast movie ever. I mean, the smallest non-speaking parts. I mean, everything is so beautifully and perfectly cast.
Do you think it's Troy Donahue's best role?
Probably.
Okay, I'm just gonna say it.
It's just a beautiful, you know, we're not.
And Michael Vigazzo was never better.
Right.
Frankie Pentangeli, he was great.
Yeah, yeah. And the violence is just weird enough so that it just sticks out in your mind. And getting shot in the eye, Mo Green shot in the eye, mm-hmm. And, you know, it's It's amazing stuff. What else is going on this week? We're looking forward to a lot of great stuff throughout the end of the month. We got Michael Ian Black and Harry Basil Wednesday night. Got Mark Harris, EW contributor and author of Pictures Out of Revolution, next Sunday. And then the big one, Wednesday the 26th, a Paul Schrader tribute with Jeff Goldblum and Dana Delaney and possibly Thomas G. Waits.
Mm-hmm.
And following Sunday, we have Mr. Schrader himself and Ira Sachs, the director of the new film Married Life. It's a quite a full, complete month here. And
yeah, I mean, this is a big month for us, so.
We got our one-year anniversary on the 15th, or right around the 15th.
Right.
Big stuff.
God, it's been a year.
A year, guys. Can you believe that? A moment of silence.
Yeah, it's going by so quickly. And
yeah,
I think that people, our friends, Mike and Alex and Anthony in the chat room, will agree. And it just seems like we started this, you know, just the other day. And
yeah, it's amazing. So I want to tell a little story here. We're going to welcome on our guests. I just checked. We're welcoming them on the second half hour here. So we got some time here to do this. We have our Paul Schrader tribute Wednesday the 26th. As it is with, you know, all of our tributes, we send out hundreds of interview requests, and it's always interesting to see what we end up with. It's like a potpourri of talent starts to drizzle in, and it's very exciting because it takes a shape and a life of its own.
Mm-hmm.
The first real yes we had was probably the number one person we wanted to speak to, and that's Jeff Goldblum, which we're very excited about. But unfortunately, our live show airs at 10 p.m., and he's in London on stage with Kevin Spacey at the Old Vic doing a David Mamet show, Speed the Plow. So his agent came back and said, you know, he can't do this. It'll be in the middle of the morning. You know, it'll be like 4 o'clock in the morning his time, 10 o'clock your time. So he can't do it. But he wants to do it. Could you give him some more options? So I did that, and I made the mistake of I didn't double-check the time zone. So I was going on the presumption that there was a six-hour difference between us and London.
Oh,
which
wow.
There never is. But I didn't check. And actually, after daylight savings time, it's usually 5 hours. After daylight savings time, it became 4 hours. So we set up a time for Mr. Goldblum to call last week, and he called exactly when he was supposed to. And I wasn't at the phone when I was supposed to be because of that error. And but listen to this. He was so great. He spent 10 minutes trying to call on his own, and then he had the hotel desk lady try for another 20 minutes. He really wanted to do this for us, and we greatly appreciated it. And I felt awful. You know, it was the day of the last broadcast we did. And I felt awful about making that amateurish mistake. And that night, actually, right before you and I got on to do the show, I was napping, as I normally do at night. I'm an old fogey. And I get this call on my cell phone. I answer it, and he says, "Jamie, this is Jeff Goldblum." I start to freak out. And I'm so apologetic. I'm so sorry. And he said, "Well, what can we do? When can we do it again?" And so we scheduled it for the next day. And so I'm very nervous. I make sure that a 4-hour time difference. Okay, he wants 2 o'clock. I need to be there at 10 a.m. I was all set and prepared. And I'm sitting at work because we all have day jobs. And he calls me on my cell phone again, and he says, "Jamie, Jeff Goldblum, can we do this early?" And I said, "No, I'm afraid we can't. It has to be. I have a certain amount of time that I can schedule these shows, and we have to stick to it at a certain period of time." And he understood, but meanwhile, everyone in the office, all the girls in the office, were going crazy because they could hear his voice on the other end of the cell phone. It was a very nice moment. Am I boring you with the story?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Just to illustrate what a great, great gentleman this Jeff Goldblum is, and wonderful, lovely man. And so he calls in, and I patch him through, and we have a good 5-6 minutes discussion before the live recording takes place. and he's asking about the show, and, you know, and this is great. And I said, yeah, it's a great platform, Blog Talk Radio. It mixes the newest technology, which is, you know, internet communication and podcasting and radio, and with the oldest technology, which is really as simple as a telephone conversation. You know, it's miraculous that way. And we're talking about it, and then the live recording starts, and we start to talk for about 3 minutes more before our interview begins. And he could not have been more gracious and a nicer person to us and just genuinely interested and involved. And I'm telling you, for the purpose of the interview, which was to pay tribute to Paul Schrader, we got from him an enormous sense of who Schrader is as a collaborator and as a person, and somebody to spend time with. It was the best interview I could possibly have hoped for. So tonight I thought it might be fun to play some of that extra conversation leading up to the interview. And you guys haven't even heard this yet.
No, we haven't.
So this is going to be fun. This is right after the live recording starts. Keep in mind that we were talking like before this, so we're really in the middle of a conversation. And this is some extra outtakes from my discussion with Jeff Goldblum. Sorry, we have an automated voice. We're on live recording right now.
Okay.
So what's going to happen is from my intro on, I'm going to edit that chunk of audio and I'm going to play it live during the tribute show.
Okay, that's great. And then when will the tribute show be on?
It plays Wednesday the 26th.
Uh-huh.
It premieres at 10 p.m. and then it can be accessed indefinitely in the archives.
No kidding. And how long will it be in total?
It'll be a two-hour show.
I see. Okay, great.
Where we'll speak to people like you, of course, who've worked with him, and then we'll review his resume.
Yeah.
It's going to be a great show. We're so excited about it.
That's so great. Who else have you done tribute shows on?
We did one for Pacino, and that was 2.5 hours. We had so many guests. I actually had to turn down Frank Serpico for the show because we were too loaded with guests.
Wow.
We did one for Brian De Palma, and then Mr. De Palma came on our show a few months later, and we did one for a series of our favorite character actors like Stephen Tobolowsky and Veronica Cartwright and Jack Warden. And so we've done well with these, and I cannot thank you enough for participating.
Oh, thank you so much for asking. Okay. It's very flattering. Where are you in New York now?
I am actually the number that we're given for the show is a New York number. I'm actually in Florida.
Oh, you're in Florida.
And one of my co-hosts is from Maryland, and and we've never even met.
Oh, that's so funny. And 11 months. And how old are you now?
How old am I? I'm 34.
34. Wow, that's terrific.
So this is really, I think all of us have day jobs. This is really a passion project of ours, and we hope it'll turn into something more. But we there's so many fan shows on the internet now, and we wanted something that really celebrates the art form and the artists more than anything else.
And you've been a fan of Mr. Schrader, and you've seen all his movies, I guess.
Oh, it's hard not to. I'm a huge fan of 70s cinema, and Mr. Schrader's a huge part of that chunk of time.
Yeah, yeah. What'd you like particularly?
Well,
are we on yet? Are we recording this yet?
We are, but this part can be edited out. But the Taxi Driver, you know, the film of his that he directed that I keep coming back to time and again is Hardcore.
Yeah, yeah, great movie.
Oh, George C. Scott. And, oh.
Yeah, he's terrific.
Yeah, so if you're ready, I'll start the intro and then I'll ask you a couple of general questions after the intro and then we'll get right into your collaboration with Mr. Schrader.
Great, Jamie.
Okay, let's do this. That's it.
Awesome.
Wasn't that great? That's great. I was like so stammering all over the place because I couldn't believe I was on the phone with Jeff Goldblum. But I mean, you can hear from his tone. I mean, that's first of all, that's definitely Goldblum.
There's no denying that.
That's right, and he's so like warm and generous, and the interview just takes off from there. And we have some information in there about The Fly and Pittsburgh, which is a great movie that he just came out with last year, and his run of Speed the Plow. And then we get right into the collaboration with Schrader. And it couldn't have been a better conversation. So look for that full interview on the 26th. That's a little teaser for you. So what do you think, guys?
I think you're lucky right now. That's all I can say.
And
this guy's
literally
Jeff Goldblum.
literally, Chris and I, we meet like a couple of times a week if we're fortunate, and we always talk about the Bloomer. We always talk about Jeff Goldblum.
That's right, Bloomer Brundlefly. I kept waiting for the sound of him barfing onto the phone there.
My ear.
Right, exactly. No, that was really cool. You guys, I was thinking, I was almost lulled to sleep there in the middle of it because you guys both have those smooth voices. Like,
yeah, he
really... the audience to get to death there.
He really does have that kind of voice. He gets excitable during the interview, but he has, it's almost, you know, I'm a straight guy, but it's almost sensual in a way. And I don't mean that as like a sexy thing. I mean, it's like, it's somebody that just like enjoys and is so relaxed in his own skin, enjoys life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can feel that confidence in his manner of speaking. And, you know, the Goldblumisms, you know, the little quirky things that he does when he speaks. There's a couple of those in the interview, and I was just giddy. There's a couple of reactions where he's like, yeah, you know, he does those kind of Goldblumisms, and I'm just over the moon at that. But, clearly, like one of the top interviews opportunities we've ever had on the show, so we're excited about that. So what else do you want to talk about? We got a few minutes before the Lost filmmakers come on. And speaking of the Lost, I think I mentioned the show Lost to you earlier today, Chris.
Mm-hmm.
I know you're a big follower of that. Jerry, are you so much a follower of
the
show?
I'm a follower, but I haven't watched the last couple of episodes. I've TiVo'd them, but I haven't watched them yet. So you'll have to forgive me.
Well, that's all the better when you're talking about a show like Lost or 24 or something like that. If for some reason your life is busy and you don't get to watch them, then it's even more enjoyable to go back and watch them on TV. You fast right forward right through them, and you don't have to wait for the week for the next one to come on.
Right.
It's a better way to do it.
That's what we were thinking when we started doing this after, like, I think I've seen the first three episodes this season, and then we just decided, why don't we just TiVo them?
Yeah, I think I don't think you're the only one. I've heard a couple other people say that they're going to do that this season, and frankly, I don't think it's a bad idea. I just can't. It's too much for me. I can't, because last season got spoiled for me, the finale, and I can't do that again. I can't deal with it. So.
Right, right. Wasn't that, though, as finales go, though, I have to give them credit. They really injected that with a lot of good stuff.
Oh, my God, that two-episode finale of Season 3, I really can't think of a better, like, one-two punch of episodes for any show ever. I include, you know, The Sopranos, any show like that. I don't think anyone's ever done it so well. It's pretty amazing.
Well, I mean, Lost is really, and it's going to be on for another couple of years, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there are two or three more seasons after this.
Two more seasons after this one.
Oh, there are two. Okay, it's two. Okay.
Yeah, although it might be three now because this one has been shortened because of the writer's strike. Not gonna be
of course, yeah.
I'm a little confused at this point. But, yeah, essentially there's, you know, 40-something episodes left or something like that.
Mm. You know, it must be hell, the writer's strike, especially on shows like that. I mean, I can see the sitcoms and things like that reorganizing as a result of the writer's strike. But to build a season now that you've got half the time, still get in your highlights, still make it as exciting as possible with the clues and teasers and things, and yet have it feel complete as a season unto itself. It must be extremely difficult for a show like Lost.
Yeah.
But
it's one of those things, there's a lot of things I want to say in response to that, but I can't ruin it for people. It's, you know, it's one of those shows that everyone loves, but you always kind of have to look around the room before you talk about it.
Yeah, but it's like 24. 24 announced, and 24 is kind of weakened, last season. But I put like season 2 of 24 up there with a lot of the best stuff on TV.
Mm-hmm, yeah,
and I know Jerry, you feel the same way. But,
yes, I do.
But they've actually postponed. They want to make it as good as possible. They're going to come out with a 2-hour movie, I think November sweeps period, that catches you up somewhat, and then their new season begins in January, and I hope they can work miracles with it.
I hope so too.
It's just one of those plots. Just the story itself, the construction of it, it has to suffer from strain. It's inevitable.
Right.
I mean, it's like making four diehards. How much bad stuff can happen to this one guy in the series of a day?
He has the worst day ever.
I know, absolutely. But you know, Die Hard's fine. Die Hard holds up, especially the original. But I think season two is the shining moment in 24's history. And I've seen all of them. Do you feel the same way?
I think that's an accurate appraisal, definitely.
Because I think it took a while to find its footing. Because the whole 24 one-hour episodes, the first season you felt like they were replaying scenes, you know, ad nauseum, that didn't say anything new.
Right.
I felt that the second season finally found its grounding, and just explosive things happen. The things that other shows lead up to, and then the hero comes in and changes it, you know, saves the day. The hero doesn't save the day a lot. It's, you know, the worst outcome possible frequently occurs in 24. That's what I like about it. It's a ballsy show.
Oh, and absolutely. I'll be curious to see what they have in store for the new season, what the storyline will be. I'm very curious.
And we have a lot of Jericho fans on the chat room too, and Jericho certainly has a real history here with Blog Talk Radio, because it was I believe Sean Daly, if I read this correctly, he shepherded a campaign to save Jericho through his show on Blog Talk Radio, and succeeded in a big way. So that was a big victory for a fan, you know, to save their best show,
right,
one of their favorite shows. The network actually listened to the fans for once. And
yeah, that is one of these rarities where they do.
Yeah, and the thousands of pounds of peanuts at their doorstep didn't.
Hey, if we got some time, I just like our buddies from Horror Movie Fans are in the chat room, and they're going to have on tonight at 10 o'clock on their show the cast of the film Red Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Mike and Alex are going to have them on tonight at 10 o'clock, and that's at www.horrormoviefans.com. That's a Blog Talk Radio show, a great show about horror, and everyone should give it a listen. And they're going to have on the cast of the movie Red Victoria.
Okay, and this is something that I've been thinking about, because there's several new movie-related shows on Blog Talk Radio. I think there's a movie Miguel, This Is Some Scene, there's a variety of them. Please forgive me if I missed you. We've had the pleasure speaking to several of them, the hosts, before. But if anyone wants to call in at any time during our chit-chat times on the show to plug your own, we're more than open to welcoming you. And I mean, I really want every movie show has to be a community where we support one another. And I've listened
Absolutely.
To a lot of those extra shows, and I feel very strongly about them too. And everyone has a unique voice and perspective here on Blog Talk Radio, and I want to support all of it.
Yeah, absolutely, and you're so right. And our good friends Mike and Alex have a great voice, and they always sound like they're having a good time talking to their guests.
Well, they're passionate about the genre that they're discussing.
Let's put it like this. Put it like this. When I go to see horror films the last couple months, I'm usually thinking, what do Mike and Alex think of this film?
Right.
That's what I do.
Right.
And before that, it was like Fatally Yours or Royce Clemens or Tony DeFrancisco. But I'm always thinking, how do they view this film? That's what I'm thinking about.
Right. Meanwhile, every movie I see, I just want to know what Jerry thinks of it.
No, you don't. You really don't. I hope that you're not that bored at home. I really do. Jamie, that really depresses me.
No, actually, I do. I think about, hey, I wonder what Chris and Jerry think about this.
Well, I'd rather what Chris thinks about it than me. But
honestly, because it makes for great conversation on the show when all three of us have had the opportunity to see something at the same time, which is rarity.
That said, let me bring something up. I wonder if all three of us have seen it. The Incredible Hulk trailer. Did you guys get to see that this week? Finally released?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah. That was kind of my reaction to it too, Jerry. Surprisingly.
No, I saw it with my brother at the Doomsday.
Uh-huh.
And he looked, turned to me and he said, how is that better than the Ang Lee one?
Well, that's kind of how I felt about it too. Like, given the whole situation with the Ang Lee movie, I liked it, but it wasn't well received. Didn't make a ton of money. So they're making a sequel. They got this new crew, new cast, you know, really exciting. But, you know, the public didn't, it kind of said, we don't necessarily want another Hulk, never, you know, don't worry about it. But they made it anyway. So you'd think that they'd come out of the gate really strong with something that just looks like, I got to see that, you know, come June. It didn't feel that way for me.
No, I thought, you know, I'm looking at it, I'm like, there are parts of the Ang Lee film I like. I think I could see what he's trying to do. There's some interesting directions he took with that. But I'm watching this and I'm just like, you know, this is supposed to be an improvement?
Yeah, it doesn't quite seem like an improvement. Although, I mean, they say there's going to be more Hulk in it, but there certainly wasn't more Hulk in the preview. Although, I guess this final battle between he and Abomination at the end of the movie, they say it's 26 minutes long. That's what Letier, whatever his name is, said. 26-minute fight at the end of the movie. That's quite a climax.
Quite a climax, but is it, you know...
I think the Sting can go on screen.
Yeah, it could. You know, that kind of... I mean, I felt that way. I hate to bring it up again, but Transformers, when you have certain action sequences that just go and go, it becomes numbing, and you're not even... I find myself thinking, like, oh, what am I going to do? Let me get some ice cream after this. Maybe go get
I feel like Damien Thorne at the end of the final conflict where she rams a dagger in his back. You love to ram that dagger about Transformers in my back.
I'll ram that dagger into anybody's back.
Okay.
But that's, you know what I mean. Like, it's not the only one. Matrix Revolutions had a little bit of that, too. Like, towards the end of the movie, it was just like, oh, my God.
Yeah, it just kept going on and on.
Yeah.
Okay, I think someone in our chat room is on hold for us. I'm hoping it's not one of the guests. I don't think they've called in. Before 80 area code, let me see.
It's Olivia.
Olivia.
Hi, Olivia.
Hey.
Yeah, it's just Olivia. I'm just, not that it isn't fascinating listening to you talk on hold for 10 minutes.
I'm sorry. I just noticed your number. I'm so wrapped up in conversation here.
I can tell it's very animated. Yeah.
So how are you doing, Olivia?
I'm doing pretty good. I wanted to thank Jamie for coming to my show the other night, and I appreciate it. And
it's always a pleasure to listen to. You got a really
good show last night, so get the archive. Last night was great. I think it was my best show with an actress and comedian named Hyla Matthews. She was just wonderful.
And tell our listeners how they can find your show.
Oh, it's Olivia Wilder Times, and it's just blogtalkradio.com/Olivia. And the show last night was Hyla Matthews, and that was great. And then Friday night was that the one you called in on, or was it Thursday night?
I think I called in Friday night, yeah.
Was it the guy from India?
Then maybe it was Thursday night.
Yeah, then Thursday when I had Michelangelo on. Friday night I had Dave Prager, who wrote a book called Poop Culture.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, and he was calling from India, and he spent an hour and a half talking about poop. It was quite a fascinating show. Yeah, he also has a site called poopreport.com, which is a little more humorous than the whole conversation turned out to be, because he wanted to talk about more serious side of poop, which... You know me, I just like to laugh and have a good time, so it was good. But it was an interesting show, and it was
You know, it's so interesting. It's so ironic that you mentioned like an hour and a half conversation about poop, because we've done that before on the show, and that was ironically our conversation about Transformers. So
really, it was. Oh, so what was the consensus on Transformers?
I think Chris classified it as liquid poop, even though he didn't use that child friendly word for it.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we had varying opinions on it. But
what did you think about it?
I thought it did what it should have.
Yeah,
I had a lot of fun with it.
I had fun with it. I was very surprised. I enjoyed it more than I expected to, which was not at all. I did not expect to enjoy it. I went with a guy who's into that kind of stuff, and I was quite entertained. I thought it was.
Well, see, that's how diarrhea sometimes works for me. I'm like, oh, I've got diarrhea. I got to go to the bathroom. This is not going to be good. I go in there, but afterwards, I'm like, you know what? It's a little bit better. It's not. That wasn't so bad, you know.
Oh yes, I see. Well, I have never found diarrhea to be entertaining, but you know. I guess everybody has a different take on that. There's reports on the poopreport.com. There's people that, you know, hundreds of people that belong to that site, and they write in daily postings, we're not even going to go there, but, you know, it's like, it's quite a fascination with some people, I think.
Yeah, let me ask you this. You mentioned that you'd gone with a male friend of yours because he was into the Transformers
mm-hmm.
craze. How what age group was this gentleman in? I'm trying to gauge the audience of Transformers.
48.
Okay. Is there a certain period of time where if
you have to understand the guy's 48 years old, but he acts like he's 20. He calls people dude.
Okay.
So,
okay.
You know, right. So he's.
I don't feel so bad now. I mean.
Yeah. Is there certain? Yeah, I was thinking it's like the old guy at the club. Is there a certain period of time when a man needs to shake his Transformers addiction?
He does. You know, his isn't really the Transformers addiction. It's the It's just that he's he likes all that kind of stuff. It's not Transformers per se, but yeah, he did like Transformers. He was quite a fan of that. So I suppose that's a whole other story, but, you know, some people think there is an age that you have to, you know, bring out the adult and stifle the inner child. And
right.
And for me personally, my inner child murdered my adult some years ago, and I threw a party. So I just...
That happened to me, too, but I didn't throw a party, though.
Oh, I did. It was great. It was like...
There's definite benefits and definite great things to be said for keeping... maintaining the inner child, you know, and I think creative people generally do that.
I think that's true.
Yeah, it's like a necessity for the creatives.
Yeah,
but Jerry, you still play with your Star Wars action figures, right?
Play with them? Man, I made this movie the other day with my kid. No. No, I play with them. I throw them at the neighbors. Speaking of Transformers, has anyone seen this Michael Bay commercial for Verizon Fios?
Yes.
Yeah. Unfortunately, it was very funny. I hated to admit it. But.
Yeah, but
when
we went to go see Funny Games yesterday, they showed that before, and he said Michael Bay. I spit out my drink. I was like, oh my God, I can't escape this guy.
Right.
Well, James Darth Vader was on CBS Sunday Morning this morning.
Dick Cheney?
No, Darth Vader.
I thought you meant Dick Cheney. I'm sorry. Okay.
No, James Earl Jones.
He was on Conan. I was watching Conan the Barbarian was on cable earlier, and he was on. Okay, never mind.
Oh, the politicals. No, I don't go into the political discussion.
No, but that's really, the sad thing is that's what I thought you meant because everyone refers to him as that.
Darth Vader. Yeah, now that you mention it, actually, yeah, I can see that. I can see that totally.
Olivia, we got another call. I'm not sure if it's our guest or not, but thank you so much for calling into our show, sweetheart.
Okay, come back again, Jamie. Good to listen to your show. See you.
Thank you, Olivia.
Thanks so much for your support. Another thing that's great that Olivia does for us, she rates our shows. And I don't know if many listeners out there understand that they can peruse our, you know, like the way I say peruse.
Yeah.
Something comes out of me like every once in a while where it's turned into a different person with a different speaking voice. They can peruse our archives, and they can rate them, comment on them. So look for that. There's a star system there, and I can't imagine us doing less than 5 stars. I mean, come on. we're looking. We have an area code on the phone, and it doesn't match up what I've been given for my guest. So I'm thinking that this might be a listener. A 905 area code. 905. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. It's White Lotus Star calling from Canada. How are you today?
Oh, hi, White Lotus.
I got a question for you.
Sure.
When is Lost on? You know, I fluked in finding it a few times, and a lot of my different friends have said, you got to watch this program. But when is it on?
Thursday nights on ABC at 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, I think.
And
is it available on...
Oh, is it 9 o'clock? Okay, I thought it was 10 o'clock.
Are past seasons available on DVD?
Yes, they are.
You know, it's really, really funny, but I have a friend of mine that came to visit me. And they were going to come for 88 days. And what they ended up doing is they ended up staying for 35 days. And then they left. And then they went on this journey around the United States. And you know all the bad weather that you had in the United States?
Mm-hmm.
You know, that started in the beginning of January? They left Toronto and went to the east coast of Canada, and they spent a journey where they were just completely lost the whole time they were on their trip. And they kept sending me these emails, and like, they, I'm not kidding you, the scripts could have been made into a movie. And at one point in his journey, he ended up in the United States, and I pinpointed it on a weather map, and there were over 100 tornadoes on the ground that were going on all at the same time. You know, like when you look at one of those weather maps?
Right. That's very frightening.
He was actually dead center to it. And he kept sending me these emails, and I mean, like, it was just as if the person was, like, completely lost. And
yeah.
All he needed to do was just travel where he went on this journey. And he went down into Colorado, and Colorado got hit with this great big huge storm. And it was just everywhere he went. And
you know,
at one point, no, but what was really funny, at one point I was explaining it to someone else I know, and they said to me, you know, you got to go look at this one episode that's on YouTube, you know, like a 3 or a 5 minute whatever. And what was really funny is that what it was actually a scene from Lost.
Wow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I just thought, wow, this was like really unbelievable, because I'm sitting there thinking, how can I help this person? And it's like he's being invaded by these 26 dimensional dark masters and dark lords, which are really real. Like these type of entities really do get tangled up in people's timelines. And it was like he didn't know his ass from a hole in the ground. And what was going on was that it kept coming back. And people kept saying, look at this episode of Lost, because this is exactly what's going on. And at different points when he was writing, it sounded like he was like either writing from the past or he was writing from the future. But I just wanted to let you know, I've enjoyed the ones I have seen, but I just wasn't sure when it was on. And I'm not really a real TV hound, so that'll make it a lot easier.
Well, I think going the DVD route is actually pretty great for a show like Lost. I've seen the first two seasons that way, and honestly, they leave you in such a cliffhanger state. The DVDs are beautiful because you can just skip right to the next episode. You don't have to wait a week.
Well, once I went on a trip, and it was really funny, into New York State, and we had gone down to do a meeting with some people. And when we left, we decided to stop and get gas, and we pulled off an obscure... like a road that, you know, where you would say, you know, you could go off and get gas, or you could go off and you could get, you know, like food. And
right.
We stopped at this one place, and when we stopped, we thought, geez, the gas station looked antiquated. And what we actually did is we actually stepped into the past, I'm positive. And we went across the street to this diner. And we went into the diner, and we started laughing, and one of the guys at the table started going, you know that music, like from Twilight Zone?
Right.
You know, like, new, 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 new. And
sure.
He looks at the menu, and he says, look, French fries are only 19 cents. And I looked at one of my friends, and my other friend looked at me, and I said, you know, this all just doesn't seem real. Like, we look like we're, like, in here, and we're, like, people from the future. And the waitress looks like she's, like, 20, 30 years in the past. And later we went back down to do another meeting for these people. And when we went back down, we told them that we'd stop to have dinner at this really cheap restaurant and they should go check it out. And they looked at us like we literally were like right from another planet. They said, well, it's impossible that you could have gotten gas where you say you pulled off, because that gas station closed like 25 years ago, and same with the restaurant. And when we left their place the second time, we went off on that exit, and you know where we stopped? There was like crag grass growing through the parking lot, and the gas station had the same type of things that we remembered seeing, but it was obvious that they hadn't probably pumped gas there in like 25 years. And, I mean, sometimes I wonder if, you know, the truth is just almost as strange as fiction.
Yep.
You know, I would kind of welcome a time warp when it comes to gas prices. I mean, if you could find a loophole for me where...
Well, you know, it's awful funny, but in Venezuela, if you drive an F-100 truck, you can pull it into a gas station and you can fill it for $10. And if
oh, wow.
you were to pull the same F-10 into, say, Buffalo and fill it with gas, I bet it would cost you like $100.
That's true.
This thing is really, really rotten in Denmark.
Yeah. So what are you, just right before we go, what are your primary interests? I would imagine.
What am I? It's really, really hard to explain what I am. They say I'm the 13th bridge. I'm a meta-gifted intuitive. I started waking up. I drowned when I was 7. I had a heart attack at 34, and at 48 I had a merge. What I mean by a merge is that my ninth density oversoul actually walked into me. So I'm kind of, I guess, a little bit of a rarity on Earth.
Well, do you have a show where you discuss these
things? I'm launching a show. It's called 13.
Okay.
And my name, I go by Simply Susan, or
okay.
I guess what you call my craft name is White Lotus Star.
Right.
And I teach people how to take back control of their life, and I teach them how to do it basically first in their dreaming. A lot of people are a lot more alive when they're dreaming than when they're walking around. And I've discovered a series of 3 sacred triangles that people can walk through. And anybody can do what I've done. Basically, I guess what I've done is I put on my ninth density oversoul. So in other words, I found my missing capstone. So it's an interesting journey.
Okay. Well, when do you air so we can look out for that show?
I think that I've got my first show is at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the 27th day of the month of March.
Okay.
That's great.
We will definitely look out for it and be listening to that. Thank you so much for calling in all the way from Canada.
I really, really do enjoy the content. I think it's absolutely fabulous.
Thank you
so much.
Programs like this. We've got to really get people to really realize that, you know, you can get lost and you can be found. And I don't know. It's just a really great program.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
So thank you so much for having me on, and I'll listen to the rest of your show.
Okay, great.
Thank you, ma'am. Bye-bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
I just sent the chat room probably the most unique call we've ever had.
No, it's cool. I liked it. It's cool.
It's fascinating.
No doubt at all. No doubt at all about that.
Yes. So we have about 10 minutes left. I'm sorry. I apologize for our guest not calling in. They confirmed last week, but we didn't do it. There wasn't a follow-up, I don't believe. So that's probably why they... Because the Sunday's difficult because, you know, they go through their grind of the weekend and then... And Sunday night, it's usually prop your feet up and relax time.
They could be walking through a triangle by now. So.
Yeah, they're walking through a triangle. So we apologize for them not joining us tonight. But we will get them back if you guys have a real interest in this film. We will definitely get them back to us, gentlemen. What are we looking forward to? What's on the horizon that we're looking forward to on the movie front?
On the movie front, okay, not on the show front, but we are
not the paranormal front or the show front. But,
well, I'll tell you a movie I'm looking forward to that's this month is Stop Loss.
Yes,
the by the same person who did Boys Don't Cry. It's actually her first film since Boys Don't Cry, and I think this could be like the first really good Iraq war theme movie that we've seen.
Right.
It looks interesting, and given that she is behind, that was a female, right, that directed that
right,
movie?
Right, that is.
I can't remember her name right at the moment.
Kimberly Pierce.
Kimberly Pierce, that's right.
Yeah. Given that it's her, it might be really unique, but do you feel like the trailer doesn't really distinguish itself very much? It just kind of seems like a coming home kind of movie.
You're absolutely right. It's not much different from the other.
I doubt it will be, but
Home of the Brave trailer almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I still haven't seen that one yet.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I
got an email yesterday, I think last or Friday night, from Ryan Felipe's agent, and so we're trying to work on getting him an interview segment on the show. She's open to trying to promote Stop Loss, so maybe we can get something together for that.
That would be cool. I'm very curious about the film. And Anthony Thurber brought up in the chat room Leatherheads with the George Clooney film. It could be very entertaining.
Yep, could be.
Yeah,
it looks like
yeah.
It might be funny.
Screwball kind of thing, and Clooney obviously is very funny. Wow, did I hear crickets there?
No. You're absolutely is.
Am I alone here?
Well, he. This thing that he's doing, this almost like the screwball comedies,
Yeah, it looks like he could do with Renee Zellweger and the other gentleman who isn't he from The Office?
Yeah.
It looks like this could be. He's very good at this. He's very good, I think, in Intolerable Cruelty and those. And so I think this is a no brainer for Clooney.
Actually, the first 45 minutes of Intolerable Cruelty, I laughed my ass off. There's so much back and forth, funny, snappy dialogue in there, and the way Clooney plays it is just so hysterical. But the first 45 minutes of the film only for me. But so Stop Loss does seem like something. You know, I just got the opportunity, and I didn't get to speak to it much on the show, to see In the Valley of Ella.
That's a really good film.
It's a great film.
Yeah.
And it's, which is surprising. I mean, we heard it was better than Crash. You told us it was.
I have no problem. I'm going to say that right. It is light years ahead of Crash.
Yeah, but it rises and falls on Tommy Lee Jones' shoulders.
Yeah, without him, you don't have a movie without him.
He is brilliant, man. There's never been, we've talked about him in No Country and his recent performances where all of a sudden, I mean, we have always enjoyed him, but he's really become a real treasure.
Yes,
as of late, such a beautiful performance, and so interior, and yet he shows you everything you need to see.
Yeah.
There's no sloppy over emoting in this, and there's some haunting moments. There's a haunting moment when they come and tell him the fate of his son, and he exits the bathroom, and the soldier is in silhouette saluting him.
Right,
and he knows at that moment. You know, and there's a brief glimpse of just pain that overwashes his face before he salutes back.
Right.
And the moments like that just slay me, you know. And he could have gone over the top with it. He could have gone obvious with it. But it's what the most moving moments in a performance for me aren't when they slobberedly cry. It's when they try not to cry.
Right.
You know, and Tommy Lee Jones from start to finish, he gives that kind of performance. It's beautiful movie, actually. Really effective.
It really is.
So, Chris, get on it.
Yeah. I have very little time to watch movies these days, so when I do, I don't want to watch anything that's going to make me cry. I just can't do it.
I understand that.
I did watch the 3-hour version of American Gangster this week, though. And I got to say, even better. I love this movie. I don't know why it got the flack that it did, but I think in years to come it's going to get remember.
What flack did it get? I'm missing something.
Oh, no. I mean, it got pretty good reviews, pretty favorable reviews, but a lot of people I talked to, like, you know, Jamie, for instance, was not crazy about the movie.
Right.
But I think as time goes on, people are going to want to see it again and again. It's such a solid movie.
Well, I think for sure.
And the director's cut really adds more to it, I think.
I'd be interested in the director's cut.
Yeah.
It's things like this preoccupy me, the taste factor. I mean, and that's what bothered me about American Gangster more than anything else. It's very delicate to do a story about someone that kind of ruined their communities by washing it in heroin and all that kind of stuff, and it was a cold-blooded murderer. And yet you're seeing him at the end of it, and he's laughing with the cops and cooperating. And there didn't seem to be a real clear definition of what we should think about this guy, at least not in Washington's performance for me, as much as Training Day. A lot of stuff in American Gangster didn't make any sense to me, the way he played it.
I don't know why. I don't know. That's an interesting way of
looking at it. You bring up a comment. That is one of the criticisms of the film, Jamie.
And the guy's on talk shows now, and it's a fascinating story, I suppose. But the guy's on talk shows now, and he's sitting with the cop, and I mean that's the nature of the relationship. I mean the cop turned into his attorney in later years, you know.
Yeah, so I mean that's the story. So they can't, you know, really change it too much, you know, or else it would be. Then what would it be? It would be even more disingenuous.
You know, and it didn't glorify it. I didn't glorify that role that he played. But it seemed ambivalent about it,
right?
You know, and that's what I disagree with.
That is one of the major criticisms of the film.
Maybe the 3-hour cut, maybe that addresses something moments here and there. It didn't make sense to me for someone that is so preoccupied with keeping a low profile to go outside and shoot the guy in the head in broad daylight in front of a crowd. I mean, that didn't make any sense to me either.
Yeah, well, that was in his own neighborhood. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, we could argue about the little points of the movie, but that's what I'm saying.
those moments, like the little things like that, I think over time, you know, you watch it again. Like watching it the second time, I got a lot more out of it.
Right.
I think those will bother you less over time as you see it.
I'm open to that idea. I mean, obviously, it's a fantastic cast and a great director. I don't think they're all retarded for having done it. Certain things like stuck in my head after I watched it.
Yeah.
And there was a sense that I think there was a common consensus that even among the reviews that liked it, that said this isn't as great as it could have been. There's some kind of squandered opportunity here.
See, I disagree with that, and I did read that from people. I think the thing is, Ridley Scott is such a good director that sometimes he puts his spell on you, and it's hard to see exactly how good he is because it's such a flaw. I think it's such a flawless directing job. It's like a magic trick. You can't quite tell how really strong it is until you step back from it a little bit and maybe watch it again. But,
yeah.
You know, I can hear myself selling the movie a little too strongly.
You're selling a really good movie.
And that's something that really did impress me, that the strength of it, its feeling of time and place.
Yeah.
You know, that it's got that in spades, I think. And I think Russell Crowe is great.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome, Jerry.
No, because a lot of people give him some of the reviews I read, some online reviews, like dismissed his performance just like right off the bat. And I love Russell Crowe. I know a couple people don't like him, but I gotta say
we're gonna go a little over tonight because I want to continue this conversation. If you want to catch up on it once it cuts off, if it does cut off, you can do so at the archive. But I do want to follow this Russell Crowe thing.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, go ahead, Jerry.
No, I really, there's the movie. I think I liked Russell Crowe from Romper Stomper and the L.A. Confidential and films like that, but it was Master and Commander where I really just was awed by him. And I noticed a couple people don't like him. I mean, some critics just really rule him out. I don't know whether it's because of some of the tabloid stuff, but I thought he had a great year last year with American Gangster and 310 to Yuma. I thought he's wonderful.
You know, and I can almost see American Gangster as a melding of the two of his badass portrayals and of his portrayal in A Beautiful Mind.
Right.
It almost seems like a perfect tapestry of those two personalities because he's fumbling in public. You know, he's fumbling in his personal life.
Right.
You have the whole stuttery Russell Crowe thing, and yet he's absolutely laser-focused on this guy and a real badass detective when it comes to getting things done.
Right.
I actually thought it was his most, in American Gangster anyway, I thought it was his most unique and genuine performance since The Insider. I thought it had a lot in common with that Jeffrey Wigand character.
Right.
Yeah.
A natural person, but... there's a lot of the little subtle nuances that make him very realistic in this movie. You really feel like you're getting to know this guy.
Yeah. I don't know why the divorce stuff was in there, because he wasn't going through a divorce at that time. I don't know what they wanted that to say about the character other than his personal life was in shambles as a result of the job.
Yeah,
I guess.
That's exactly what it's saying.
Yeah. Yeah, so interesting. And we went over for that.
Well, that's all right. Anything for Russell Crowe.
Absolutely, baby. And the Hulk trailer, did we get to finish that conversation, Chris, or were we cut short?
No, we started walking through triangles right about then.
Okay. We went from the Hulk to Area 51. And that
the Hulk is in Area 51.
Isn't it? Well, then, hey, it kind of matched. It was seamless then.
No. I think, though, to give the Hulk the benefit of the doubt, when I saw the trailer for the first X-Men film in the theaters in 1999, I wasn't blown away by it, but it turned out to be a really good film. That could be a possibility with the Hulk.
Yeah, I'm not doubting at all that it's going to be a fun movie. I didn't see any of the Transporter movies. I did see the Jet Li film. Can't quite remember the name of
War?
It now, but... No, not War. The one that he did with Bob Hoskins also. Louis.
Oh, Unleashed.
Yeah, Unleashed, or Danny the Dog, I think was what it was.
Yeah, the original title, yes.
Yeah, and I thought that was a pretty, you know, entertaining movie. I mean, I can see where he's, you know, gifted in directing action, and maybe someone like that is more appropriate to do a superhero movie than Ang Lee.
Right.
got a great cast, and how cool does William Hurt, who I love, how cool does he look in the preview?
True.
And the Hulk, you know, the actual Hulk creation looks good, and Abomination looks interesting. I'm sure it'll be fun, but it just surprises me, given the situation with the previous Hulk movie, you would think that the trailer would be, you know, literally just like firing on all cylinders and something that people would immediately say, I have to see that. Especially
right.
If summer this crowded. I got
very crowded.
It could get lost, you know.
Well, actually, that's something that I've been saying from the beginning, because I was in the minority there, because, I mean, you Hulk has always been top on your radar, and I've always somehow missed it, you know, when I list the movies of the summer. But what I said
was it was dependent on the trailer, you know.
Right.
And now I agree with you 100%. The trailer doesn't sell it to the point where I'm convinced it won't get lost. I don't feel that way.
I think it's like I believe in Edward Norton. I think this is a real stretch for him. And my only concern with Edward Norton is that it wouldn't deliver the goods that make you giddy from a movie like this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it would be two in its head. But you know, hearing that it climaxes in a 26-minute battle, I'm inclined to think that it will.
Right.
Yeah. And I think he's a real smart guy. There's a bunch of controversy right now because he's struggling with the cut. You know, he's struggling for rights to have his own cut of the movie, which is not unheard of with Ed Norton movies.
That's true.
There's a lot of, you know, Ed Norton, he's a fantastic artist, and I think I read the most telling quote about him from somebody that grew up with him in this big piece that they did right after Primal Fear, where the friend said, There's a part of Edward Norton that knows 8 different languages. And then there's the Edward Norton that makes sure that you know that he knows 8 different languages.
Mm-hmm.
And it really gave me a sense of who he is.
Right.
You know, and I don't know how to put it into words beyond that quote, but you know what I mean?
I do.
It's the guy that's undeniably talented and smart, but he will not let it go by for a second that he isn't that talented.
Right. Yeah. And I was surprised that he would do a movie like this because as Mike and
Alan
brought up in the chat room, he really hated the fact he had to do the remake of The Italian Job. He was, like, really angry he had to fulfill his contract to do that film.
He tried to get out of it.
And I was really surprised when I first heard that he was going to be in The Hulk. It just seems so against everything he believes in.
Yeah, even if he was to be the star of the original Hulk, if they'd never made the Ang Lee movie, if he was cast in a new movie called The Hulk as the first Bruce Banner, that would be surprising. But the fact that he would come in and do this, you know, total Hollywood move, which is to make a sequel with a, you know, starting from scratch, you know, a reboot of the franchise, that's even more surprising for a guy like him, that he would be involved with something like that.
And something that will undeniably be a franchise if it's successful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Does he plan on sticking with it if it's successful?
Well, what does he have anything? I mean, he has that one with Colin Farrell, The Pride and the Glory, I think, the cop movie.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah, it does, and I don't know when that's coming out now, but there's that. But what does he have after? Like, does anyone know what he's?
I don't know. It is neat though, because last year he was one of the honorees at the film festival. And when he did his public appearance and he did his question and answer with the public, that following morning they announced Hulk. So I was sitting in an audience with people that had gone to see Edward Norton the night before, and I said, yeah, he just signed on to play the Hulk. And they looked at me like I was crazy. I said, Edward Norton? Are you sure you know who Edward Norton is? But I think he's extremely talented, and to get an idea of how talented he really is, I would suggest watching Down in the Valley.
That's a great film.
Which I think is his Taxi Driver.
Mm-hmm.
Assassination of Richard Nixon is Sean Penn's Taxi Driver.
Mm-hmm.
I equate these the same way, even though they're not exactly the same. Down in the Valley is like a new modern kind of Western feel to it.
Yeah, Down in the Valley is a very underappreciated film.
Yeah.
The crickets again.
Yeah, I know. Anything else we want to cover? I think we covered the Hulk trailer. Anything else we're looking forward to or we want to talk about in this episode? Because from here on out, I think we're chock full of guests for the rest of the month, so this is our together time.
I think we pretty much covered it all. It's kind of a, I don't want to say a weak time, but, you know, it's like the calm before the storm.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a big storm.
Yeah, yeah, so Iron Man will hit that off on the 2nd, won't it?
Yes, it will.
Yeah, and talking about new trailers. I mean, the new trailer for that one came out with accompanied by a full rock score a couple weeks ago. Are we getting more and more hyped about that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I saw a trailer yesterday for The Dark Knight in the theater, and I gotta say that looks, you know, even, you know, with the horrible, you know, it's more, what's the word I'm looking for, with Heath Ledger's passing, it's really eerie watching that trailer now.
And that's the same one that we've seen.
Yeah, it's the same one, but it just, I gotta say, it looks incredible.
Well, they showed clips of it at Show West the other day, and they're not shying away from the Joker. It's the Joker movie, you know.
Right.
And Chris Nolan and Christian Bale both spoke about it during the event, and they showed extended clips, and they say he's just mesmerizing. That there's no explanation for his condition like there was in the first Batman. There's no, I fell in a pool of purple acid. Kind of.
As soon as we see him, that's it.
He is psychotic. And the opening bank scene, and he takes off his mask, and he says, you know, whatever doesn't kill you makes you stranger, I think is his first line. They say he is mesmerizing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I don't doubt that's going to be the performance to watch this summer.
Right.
And that and the curiosity of if Harrison Ford can pull off Indiana Jones again.
Right.
Those are the two question marks, and I'm really looking forward to both. So
they are up there.
All right, guys. Good show.
All right, great. Yeah.
Nice bonding time.
Mm-hmm.
And I will speak to you both later.
Okay, great. Thank you, everyone. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Is this Chris by chance?
No, this is Mark Center.
It's Mark. Hi. We were actually, our interview with yourself and Chris, it was scheduled for, I guess you're in L.A., it was scheduled 3:30 your time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I was really looking forward to talking to you guys because I just got to see your film over the weekend. I was really excited about it. But if we can find a way to reschedule, I'll get back in touch with Ed over at Anchor Bay.
Oh, yeah, I would love to, man. I don't know what the mix-up might have been. I apologize.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, did Chris call in by chance?
Chris did not. We were waiting, and you're the only call that's come through from the film, actually. So let me get back in touch with them, and we have another show on Wednesday evening. It'll be the day after the DVD release, but we've got people's interest peaked, definitely, from our listener base on this film. So.
Cool.
Maybe we can reschedule for Wednesday night.
I'll love to do that, man, and I apologize. We'd love to do it, so I'm sorry for inconveniences on our part.
No, that's fine. And you're astounding in the film, by the way.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
It's one of the most original performances I've ever seen, I think, in that genre of film. So we will reschedule with you, and I can't wait to talk to you. Just look for an email or a phone call.
I look forward to it. Thanks a lot, James.
Thank you, sir. Bye-bye.
Okay, man. Bye-bye.